This episode is brought to you by Verizon Media, where massive audiences go for trusted content, connections, and commerce. They're putting their media partners in the middle of the action with their omni-channel advertiser and publisher solutions.
Hey, this is Ryan Joe, managing editor of AdExchanger, and you're listening to Social Distancing with Friends, the podcast where we check in with members of the digital ad community to make sure, hey, we're still all okay. Today, we welcome Jordan Bitterman, CMO of Triplelift. Jordan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, where are you checking in from?
I am in West Hampton, New York, where I'm writing this thing out with my wife, who is also in our business, our son, Gus, who's a 13-year-old eighth grader, and I guess what is a diminishing supply of paper products at this point.
Who's in charge of going out? And are you going to just order it from like Amazon Pantry?
There seem to be like very little time slots like anywhere. So we actually just had another conversation this morning. We've been going out like once a week for reinforcements. But paper products don't seem to be on any shelves these days. So we're sparing squares a little bit judiciously these days.
My coworker Sarah Sluice was actually trying out an algorithm recently, or some sort of browser plugin that lets her get a slot in Amazon Pantry or Whole Foods delivery, one of those delivery services. I don't think it was working because she seemed a little bit frustrated by it. But know that those things are out there.
Yeah, this is like it's Lord of the Flies right now. So as things get worse, we'll have to try to figure out other things to do. In the meantime, we're going light on everything.
What's the room like where you're recording from?
This room is the only room we have upstairs. We have a pretty much a one floor house except for this one room. It's normally like a playroom for Legos. So I'm looking at a whole bunch of Legos right now. And for the last 4 weeks, it's become my office. It's light and bright, and I appreciate that. And it's quiet, and that's really good for working too.
How many Legos would you say you've discovered with your bare feet?
Many. And the funny thing is, a lot of these Legos are mine from when I was a kid. Like, we saved a lot of Legos. So while my son has a lot of his own, there is some old stuff here from like spaceship, you know, early spaceship sets and all that stuff. So if I'm stepping on anything, you know, I can't really curse anyone other than myself at this point.
Well, it's exciting to have you because you you have a really kind of extensive resume. I feel like you've kind of worn many, many hats in the digital ad industry. SVP of social and mobile at Digitas. You were CSO at Mindshare at IBM. You were both CMO of Weather and Watson Ads, VP of digital strategy and sales, and now you're Triplelift CMO. So, you know, what's it kind of like working at, I guess, an ad tech startup versus a big huge tech company versus an agency?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. I never went looking for ad tech. That was not what I was thinking about. And this came to my attention, this opportunity, and I wasn't really all that pumped up about it at first. I started doing some research on the company and started having conversations with people at the company and realized, actually, I think this might be in the sweet spot for me. And what's interesting for me is that it reminds me a lot of my days at Digitas, which I think is pretty much my favorite place that I've been to so far. Along my stops, it's early on here, so I'll reserve judgment here, but it does feel a lot like Digitas in that it's like really a good sized company. There's everybody who is at the company, you get the sense that we're all in it together and everyone's working really hard with pride. And so those similarities to the intelligence and the work ethic at Digitas and the creativity is all really there. And so I kind of feel like this size company and even this category at this moment are kind of in my sweet spot.
What sort of career advice, well, let's say pre-pandemic career advice, since everything's being redefined right now, would you give to somebody who's working at an ad tech startup versus somebody who wants to be successful at a big tech company versus somebody who wants to be successful at a holding company agency?
I think in all of those settings, I think entrepreneurialism inside of a company is really important. It's always important to have ideas, pursue ideas, don't let them drop, push on them if you feel that they're right, even if you're, you know, hearing a lot of no's. it's a lot easier to do that at a company like Triplelift than it is maybe in a big holding company or at a big brand. But it doesn't mean that that shouldn't be done everywhere, in my opinion. And I've had some success and some failures, you know, pursuing that kind of a strategy at the companies that you mentioned before. But I think it's super important to push on it always.
How difficult is it, you know, kind of navigating the different bureaucracies? You know, because I'm kind of imagining with Triplelift, it's a lot, you know, you have a much more direct line, you know, at an agency owned by a big holding company or at someone like IBM, I would imagine it's, you know, it's a lot trickier.
It can be, but you know, I'll say when I was at Digitas, and this, you know, this extends to a lot of other people, colleagues of mine from that organization, and the same thing with Mindshare. There was really a feeling that, like, if you had a big idea and you could articulate why that big idea would help the company and help its clients, then you know there was an appetite for that, and so. Just like anywhere, it's a little bit less so here because I think there's a little bit more of a, if you want to do it, just go do it and beg for forgiveness later kind of a thing. But at agencies, in my experience anyway, it was one of those things where if you could make a case as to why it would help, there was, you know, you just have to build the case. And sometimes you have got to build it a little bit more airtight than others, but build the case and make your case and you can do a lot of great things.
So how has your job changed since the pandemic hit? Did you have to change the marketing message around Triplelift?
Yeah, we've definitely had to do that for sure. You know, one of the things that I've used this term over the last couple of days a lot, but it feels like the half-life of ideas has shrunk down to just a few days. Like there was a moment, you know, before this all really went down, before the quarantines went down and all of that, but still we kind of felt something was happening. We had this idea that we were going to create like Triplelift branded Purell bottles, and we were going to distribute them out to our customers with, you know, just a supportive message, you know, be safe out there, keep washing your hands, etc. And we were like, oh gosh, this is expensive and it's going to take probably 2 weeks, and who knows if in 2 weeks we'll be working from home or we're going to be still in offices or what. So we kind of put that to the side. And then, you know, when literally the first day that I was quarantining, I had this idea that, which I thought was brilliant, but it wasn't, which is like, you know, let me like go onto Slack and just query the company and find out what people are watching on Netflix and Hulu, et cetera. And we'll just start tweeting about that. So like we can kind of be in it with everybody else. And I did that a few times out of our channels, and it was like just very little interaction. It just felt like silly and small. And so as the new normal has settled in, we've been able to really do some early work that we're proud of. We've created a curated deal that supports premium news sites that we're calling Help Journalism. And the whole idea here is, you know, we're dropping some of our costs. And the idea is that traffic to news sites have gone up. I think the number's like close to 60% since the pandemic started, but their CPMs have dropped, and we're trying to find ways to drive more dollars into that category. So that helps our supply partners, but we also think it can help with our demand partners, the agencies and the brands. Another thing we've done is we've created this program called Every Meeting Makes a Difference. And essentially what we're doing is we're donating money, three meals actually, to World Central Kitchen, which is an entity run by Chef Jose Andreas, who you probably know from like hurricane relief efforts, et cetera. So for every meeting that we have, we're donating three meals to that cause. And it's just something to give our sales team something to be proud about and an additional kind of talk point to talk about with their customers. And we've gotten some really great early feedback from our customers at agencies and brands saying, it feels really good to be doing this meeting right now, which is exactly what we were hoping for. So those are the kinds of things that are super different than before, because obviously we weren't doing those types of activities before Corona.
Yeah, the CPMs dropping is just this persistent problem and that everyone seems to be trying to solve. Do you think to what extent do you think it's solvable, and to what extent is it something that, you know, you just kind of have to wait out before advertisers become less gun shy?
I think both things are true. As I've been reaching out to brands and agencies about this curated deal, I've gotten some really good interest back from a number of parties saying, yeah, we've actually decided to go back into news. And there's others that have said, look, this is a little bit, this isn't where we want to be, or, you know, we this isn't where we normally advertise. And so we're not going to just start doing it now. You know, when news CPMs start to go down, we've already seen studies that suggest that it's a very brand safe environment for brands to be in. And so when those CPMs start to go down, there almost becomes no reason not to be there based on the brand studies, based on, you know, a more efficient category, and based on the fact that in the world that we're living in right now, coronavirus is everything. You know, it's got its tentacles into everything. And so it doesn't matter what the story is, it's got an element of corona attached to it. And so you can't ignore it forever. You just have to realize that it's the new normal, and it's not a dirty word.
Yeah, it surprises me also that, you know, CPMs are down, yet audience engagement seems to be higher than it's ever been. Yep. For a lot of publications. So it's sort of surprising to me that advertisers aren't seeing this as an opportunity to really kind of get their message in front of a lot of people relatively cheaply.
Well, and that's what this Help Journalism Curated deal is all about. It's just about trying to create like that one bit on top of the fulcrum to get people over the edge and to start thinking about this again, because by the way, not that any brand on this earth needs to, you know, make journalism a charity, because that's not their responsibility. Their responsibility is to their shareholders, and we totally understand that. But when everything else is equal, you got to start looking at the news category and saying, this is an essential part of the proper functioning of society. Like, we need this. And so we want people to wade back in.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about the sense of responsibility advertisers have to supporting the news, because you've heard that message. I've heard that message a lot from publishers, from vendors, saying, "Hey, advertisers, you really got to support this stuff. It's doing a public service." You know, but the cynical side of me says, "Hey, these advertisers are already pressed. They're going to be really conservative. They're not going to try to take a risk." And maybe they don't feel that sense of social responsibility. They feel a sense of responsibility to their shareholders or to just, you know, making money. So I don't know, how do you reconcile, you know, that sort of thing, that sense of social responsibility with, you know, hey, I got to make sure my business stays afloat.
Look, I used to say some of the same things to when I worked on the agency side, and I would have like philosophical conversations with really close clients of mine. And I would say, guys, you're killing the agency business. Like, this idea that you're paying less and less every month and every year, and you're asking for more and more at that same clip, it's killing the industry. And you need the industry. And I, as a client now, even though I'm at a media company, I'm also a marketer, and I think about it in those terms. I know that agencies are incredibly important. I've hired outside consultancies and agencies to help me with the work that I do. And if they didn't exist and I didn't make it a fair playing field for them, then it wouldn't serve me either. And so I think the same thing is true, you know, in all of these other like in news categories, et cetera. Like, we can kill these categories and they won't exist anymore. But then not only as a society do we not have them, but importantly, as an advertiser, if you want to be selfish about it from your brand perspective, which I think is fair, you won't have that category to utilize anymore. And that category is important.
What was the response, you know, when you would bring up, hey, man, you guys are killing the agency business, or, you know, would that lead to any change?
You know, I think overall we've still seen advertising agencies not get the, they don't have the sort of leverage that they used to have. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about that in terms of clients saying, well, maybe they shouldn't have as much leverage as they had, but they still need leverage. They still need to be an important part of the value chain. And so the conversations I had with clients back then, I think there was a healthy skepticism about what agencies bring to the table in terms of their remuneration, how they're paid. But there was also real acknowledgement that agencies do critical work. I don't know that it's gotten any better. But, you know, until it reaches like a natural, you know, low point, and who knows where that is, it won't start to come back. And I hope maybe we've reached a natural low point, but I'm not really close enough or expert to it right now to be able to say.
How has the pandemic affected, you know, product development and pipeline at Triple Lift?
That's one area that we have not really flinched on at all. We have new products coming out in Q2 around display and around video, which is both parts of our business becoming increasingly important to us, an increasingly large part of what we do. And we also have a really interesting emerging area of OTT, where we are doing work that is on the front lines of where OTT is going. And, you know, if you think about it right now, one category that is not suffering at all is just streaming services. And so while they're heads down thinking about creating new content to keep up with all the demand right now, now and in the future, they're thinking about how to monetize those their services more. And we've got products for that. So we're really focused on getting those out right now. And they're still on our roadmap, unchanged.
I'm actually kind of wondering about the outlook for streaming services. And, you know, because on the one hand, obviously everyone's staying at home, streaming traffic is going up. But on the other hand, production has sort of stopped. I mean, there was a story yesterday, I think, in The Hollywood Reporter about furloughs and layoffs at Marvel, Lucasfilm, and at Disney. I've got a few friends in the industry who are worried because they're not sure if their shows are going to get picked up. You know, if it's cheaper just to run reruns of CSI rather to invest in a comedy that was being shot in New York City, well, you're going to just cancel the new comedy and put up CSI episodes. So I wonder if maybe, you know, right now it seems like there's great potential for streaming services, but maybe down the line when there's no really new content, is that going to hit them?
We're incredibly bullish on this category. And that's why we're placing our bets there. You know, I was just on a call yesterday, so we were kind of talking about this. It was an internal call with a couple of our colleagues on our OTT business out in LA. And so I'll try this out on you. I haven't really thought about it any more deeply than the conversation from yesterday. But if you think about it, when you think about the broadcast networks, for instance, they, you know, it's right now is the time where they're shooting shows that are going to launch in October, like fall premiere season. And they can't be shooting that. So what happens to the fall TV season? Does coronavirus become, in addition to all the cord cutting that's been going on, the thing that really starts to create no seasons in television? Maybe, maybe not, we're not sure. But the one thing that I would say is kind of interesting about all of that is I can absolutely see when we do resume shooting original content that there are now a lot more takers for that content on the distribution side. There's going to be a lot more interest from advertisers, and companies like Triple Lift, not just us, but us as well, will have moved a lot further down the road in terms of, you know, our technology prowess to be able to support the monetization of all of that. So I think it just signals more bullish opportunity for the broader ecosystem of video, which includes streaming.
We were debating this in Ad Exchanger, the editorial team, whether this might mark the beginning of the end of linear TV as we know it, just because of the move to streaming. And maybe this might catalyze a lot of the tech development that still needs to happen in order to kind of ensure that area, you know, flourishes the way it needs to.
Yeah, look, you know, for years we've all been talking about this idea of, like, you know, when is the year of mobile? And obviously the year of mobile happened a long time ago, although I did see someone on Twitter the other day saying that this is the year of mobile.
Seriously?
Was
that a joke?
It was a joke only because we're all on our phones all the time. But yeah, okay. Yeah. But I would actually argue that, you know, the beginning of the end of linear TV happened a long time ago. And that's not to suggest that linear TV won't continue to be strong. It still, especially as it relates to live events like sports, et cetera, plays a huge role in how we consume content and how advertisers want to reach their audiences. But the fragmentation of video is so strong now that I think we've already kind of reached that point. Like, we're already on a different slope than we were before.
We might too soon see the fragmentation of live sports. I mean, you know, the NFL mm-hmm. contract is coming up. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, if Amazon gets it, that could really be, you know, another big nail in the coffin of linear TV.
Absolutely. And absolutely. And those and the leagues, at the end of the day, what they care about is audience. And if they feel like they can get that audience, both in its quantity and also in its quality, meaning, you know, that's where the eyeballs are and the multitasking that they can potentially offer to have, like, you know, additional screen experiences, et cetera, they'll absolutely go there and they won't even flinch at it. I think we're a few years away from that, obviously, but I no doubt, I agree.
Do you think they can? I mean, the knock against OTT and, you know, digital video is it just doesn't have the scale that linear has, but it seems inevitable that it probably will, maybe in, I'm throwing this out there, maybe 5 years or so.
Sure. And the other knock has been the technology isn't there. But guess what? We're all working from home right now. You and I are not sitting in the studio together. We're doing this online. Our whole business at Triplelift is, like many other companies, is taking place over Zoom and Slack and you know, Google Cloud. And all that's working flawlessly. Like, there's no problem there. And so and by the way, the audience is now there. I just did a Passover Seder last night on Zoom, a line I never thought I would say in my life. So, so, you know, between the technology and the audience, those shifts are starting to happen.
I literally was just talking to two other people who did Passover Seders on Zoom. I think they liked it because it was shorter.
You know, I said to my brother last night, because he had promised us a 10-minute Seder, and I said to him, this 10-minute Seder is the best 40-minute Seder I've ever been to. Like, let's wrap it up, buddy. Let's go.
Are your clients asking for favors as things, you know, as the money flow kind of stoppers up? You know, are they asking for extended payment terms or discounts? And, you know, are you giving them?
There has been a bit of that. We've been asked for pro bono inventory. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to come back with packages like Help Journalism and others, because we feel like if we can manage that from the perspective of what will work for us and for them, then we'll all be in a good spot together.
Triplelift, like a lot of ad tech companies this week, you know, you guys experienced some layoffs and furloughs. You know, how do you kind of maintain the morale? How do you kind of work through that? I mean, it is everybody who's kind of going through that situation.
Yeah. So we did last week, we did a layoff, and it was really difficult. You know, saying goodbye to colleagues is extremely hard, especially when you're a 300 person plus company, and many of our staff have been with us since the early days. So it's a pretty tight team. But we had to make some hard decisions. And when you're doing this remotely, you're also forced to make these decisions remotely. You're forced to actually take the actions remotely. And so we decided we had to move fast, and we had to move deliberately and with care for everyone involved. So I feel like we did a good job of balancing all of that. One of the really good things about this company is that it's a very communicative company. And what I mean by that is 2 times a week, Fridays and Sundays, Friday night and Sunday night, there's an email that goes out from one of our three co-founders. There's on Wednesdays, these things called chat and choose, where the whole company, whether you're in person in New York or you're in a remote location, which is about 20% of our staff, we dial in over video conference, and we do something called a chat and chew. There's tons and tons of communication on Slack, et cetera. So I say all of that to say that when you have a company that communicates really well and really often in general, it makes the communication that happens remotely, especially in bad news, feel somewhat organic. And I hope my colleagues around the company would feel that way. We've gotten a lot of good feedback, as morbid as that may sound, for how we handled last week, because it was very important to us to do it with humanity. But when you're a very communicative company, you get a leg up in something like that, because communication is something you're used to.
When you're doing a chat and chew, do you have to strategically pick out what you're going to chew on because you know your colleagues are going to be studying it?
Yeah, I think the chew part has sort of gone by the wayside because people can eat what they want to when they want to. But when we're in the office, at least for those in New York, and I know this we do the same thing in remote offices as well. We have it catered with Mexican food 1 week or Middle Eastern food the following week. And, you know, I had only been at the company for 3 months and I might've missed, a few of these for, travel purposes from time to time, but the food's damn good. So, I think we're missing that right now.
All right. Finally, what do you do for fun? Have you discovered any new hobbies? Are you going back to your Lego building?
We actually, my wife and I and our son, we're talking about, we had seen a show on Netflix, which is one of our major hobbies right now. And it was I think it was called Lego House. And it was this documentary about the building of this building in Denmark, an interactive museum for Lego. And in that show, so one hobby giving rise to another hobby, there was this concept of building art that you can literally frame and put on the wall. They had made the Union Jack from the UK. And so we are now in this deep philosophical conversation in our family about, well, what is the art that we're going to build together before this is all over? And then we'll go bring it to our favorite framing store and put it on the wall.
What are the candidates?
We're kind of stuck on flags right now. We're trying to think about how to get out of that because it just seems like that's what we saw. So let's not just go build the exact thing we saw, but it can't be too three-dimensional. It can be a little three-dimensional, but it still needs to hang on a wall, and that stuff gets pretty heavy pretty quick. So that's the thing that we're thinking of.
All right, Jordan, thanks so much. It was a great talking to you.
You got it, Ryan. Thanks.
Tune in next week to hear more from Verizon Media. By connecting billions of data insights, their demand-side platform makes it easier to deliver an omni-channel strategy with precision and transparency. Visit verizonmedia.com/advertising to learn more.